Hi, this is Manton Reese.
And this is Daniel Jalkin.
And this is Core Intuition. We all learned something today.
Manton, I waited until about 2 weeks before macOS 10. Sorry, OS 10. I know you do that too.
And
we are the proud bearers of macOS 10 heritage, I guess. Although whenever I say the word heritage, I feel like I'm a racist or there's this place in the Boston area that says something like it's in Lexington, I think I've seen it. It's like New England something like heritage. And whenever I see that word, I think these are racists. Like, whatever this is, it's racists. And this is long before this recent thing with the Confederate flag and all that. This is just it feels like code word to me. Anyway, yeah. Not to get off on that tangent, but
no.
OS 10 10.10.4 was released on Tuesday alongside Apple Music, and it was a big day. Probably on Twitter, I saw as much, at least at the moment of like release, I saw as much celebration among my peers of the end of Discovery D as with the advent of Apple Music.
That's interesting. Bunch of nerds on Twitter. Who are these people?
Who knew that I followed so many nerds? I mean, come on.
And it's funny because I'm on 10.11 full-time now, and so I'm not even get installed 10.4. I mean, I feel like that's great for people, but I've moved past it.
See, you, Manton, are on the single system train.
Yes.
And I have often sort of like recommended that you move to the multi-system train that I'm on, where you have a system, a build machine that is like the old, like stable thing that you use to make like build releases. So it's nice for me because one of the selling points of this, not that I'm really trying to sell you, but you know, to explain it for our listeners, one of the selling points is I can be kind of crazy with my working Mac. And it's funny because most people would work the opposite way. Probably they'd be like, I don't want to threaten my working Mac. That's like my lifeblood. But for me, I'm like, I can always reinstall. I have source control. I have backups. My main day-to-day Mac, it would be annoying if I had to reinstall it, but I can do it. So I tend these days to be pretty bleeding edge with that. And I run like you are, 10.11. I'm suffering and / enjoying that. But it's gotten a lot easier to have this attitude since years and years ago. I set up a Mac Mini in the house that runs something older. And it's really nice. I use Jenkins. I've mentioned that before. It's an open source system, what do you call it? Continuous integration. Mm-hmm. What's nice is when I go to make a build, it's been years and years and years since I had that, I think, all too common experience of going to make a build for the App Store or just to release publicly on your website and having something like unexpectedly not work because you updated to the latest OS or you updated to the latest Xcode or, you know, your version of you allowed like Xcode to quote unquote fix entitlements or whatever, right? And my Mac Mini just does that for me. Not that I don't have issues with it every once in a while, but it's a stable thing. And so it's so stable that it was actually running 10.9. 10.9? No, I'm wrong. It was running 10.8 up until, is that right? 10.9 or 10.8? I can't remember. Mm-hmm. But it was running something not even yet 10.10 up until a couple weeks ago. The funny thing is I finally got motivated to install 10.10 because I wanted to start using, I realized like that build machine, there's the tell that actually I have two build machines. That build machine is running, it's my later build machine. So I have a 10.6 system too. This is what you do with old Mac Minis.
Yeah, they become media servers or build machines.
Yeah, so I have this, my quote unquote new Mac Mini, which is a few years old by now, but it was running 10.9, I think. And I realized I wanted to, that's it. I wanted to run Xcode. I don't know. I wanted to run something that needed 10.10. I think it was the latest Xcode 6.4 needs 10.10. And so I said, fine, I'll finally upgrade my Mac Mini to 10.10. I wasn't even thinking at the moment that I did this like 2 weeks ago that for the past like year, 90% of all my nerd friends have been whining incessantly about Discovery D, right? And I've been running 10.10 on my main Mac, on my MacBook Pro, or sorry, what's it called? Yeah, that's it, MacBook Pro, for, you know, ever since it was in beta, and I haven't really had Discovery D issues. But I kid you not, Manton, I'm sitting here in my office. I actually installed 10.10 through screen sharing to my Mac Mini. I'm sitting here happy as a clam. You know, I talk to you every week over the Wi-Fi from my office. It's reliable. It's good. I install 10.10 on my Mac Mini, which is downstairs in the living room, and it reboots. And then all of a sudden, I have no Wi-Fi on my MacBook Pro.
Yikes.
And I'm like, how? Why? This doesn't make any sense. Like, I have an air, you know, an AirPort Extreme, whatever, the you know, sitting there. That's separate from the Mac that I just happened to upgrade to 10.10. But then I started to feel the rage that everybody has, I guess, been feeling for a year about Discovery D, because it turns out just having this Mac with Discovery D plugged into my AirPort base station somehow managed to screw it up enough that it could no longer serve Wi-Fi reliably to my 10.11 MacBook Pro.
Wait, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's bad. The problems I had, and they're all in the past, I think, but were all around printing, which I can kind of understand because that's always been kind of flaky.
Yeah, well, I had little issues here and there, but I thought, this isn't so bad. I knew it was a problem, and I was glad they were fixing it. I had the thing with, like, the, you know, machine gets the number in the parentheses. I may have had some, like, you know, connecting through Apple Share to different servers on my home network. But this was where I drove it home. I was like, wow, if this is the kind of stuff people have been dealing with, just plugging a Mac into a router kills your entire home network. I was like, started looking up and I was like, could this be true? Is this possible? So I unplug it from the Wi-Fi and I plug it into directly into the Verizon router. Everything goes back to normal. I'm fine. Wow. Fine again. So anyway.
That's crazy. That's like one of those fake things that like the cable modem people tell you that doesn't make any sense when they're trying to tell you why your network doesn't work.
Yeah.
But it's actually true.
Apparently what it does is it somehow poisons the Bonjour cache or something. And I guess maybe it's only an issue for Apple's own routers because they somehow use Bonjour. I don't know. I don't understand. I don't claim to understand it, but it's a big old bag of hurt, and I'm really grateful that they went back to MDNS responder on 10.10.4 and on, you know, 10.11 for that matter. But I feel so lucky too, though, that I only had to suffer this problem for like 2 weeks and then everything is better. And furthermore, I didn't really suffer it for that long. Once I figured out I could plug it into the Verizon router, everything got better for me pretty quickly.
I'm glad things are better, but yeah, that's frustrating.
Yeah.
You're talking about these build machines. I'm kind of like, oh, I'm glad I don't have the complexity of that. I love having one machine, but I do have a little bit of that kind of, because I'm working on a project for a client and they have a build machine. So anytime do a Git push, you know, it'll do a build and it'll upload it to Crashlytics and send it out to people and stuff. And it's all automatic and nice. So I do like some of that, but I also like not having to run that on my own network and kind of have to deal with that myself. It's really nice to, I used to, until now, actually, in all the previous Mac OS X releases, I would always do like a separate partition or something for the new thing. And just over the years, I found that I just didn't use it enough. Having to boot into something else, I just didn't use it as much as I should have. And so I love running 10.11 full time. No partitions. That's it. I'm all in on this. And it's perfect because the Mac stuff I'm working on right now is going to require 10.11. So I can actively work on it. I don't have to switch between OSs. I like it a lot.
Yeah. And you get invested into the OS earlier than most people so that, you know, you have that opportunity to like notice something that's really screwed up and actually file the bug when it matters. It definitely comes with some pain, but I'm up for it in part because I'm used to this from way back in my years at Apple when I was always running the latest OS. But yeah, I'm happy so far with 10.11. I think I'm hoping that there won't be like a beta release between now and when it ships that just totally tears me apart. But I'm definitely looking forward to the next update because I feel like it has room to become more stable. But I'm feeling pretty good about it so far.
Cool. Well, as you said, they shipped a lot of stuff this week. Apple Music, iOS 8.4, which is essentially just a new music app. And I used Beats, last year and really liked it. And I blogged a little bit about how I thought they got curation right and how I thought Apple could learn from Beats. This was before they bought them.
Yep.
About how, curation works and about how you can tell from the Beats people, they love music. They are doing all this cool music stuff. And at the time, you could make an argument that Apple didn't love anything and they were kind of doing half a great job on some of their products. They didn't really have something that they like, we love this and it's excellent. And so I thought they could learn a lot from them.
Yeah.
Obviously they bought the company, so they agreed, but I upgraded to Apple Music and I think we're going to do the family, $15 a month plan because that's a pretty great deal actually. And I think after using some of these services and then going back to buying albums, I think I'm ready to go back to streaming again. And I don't know. So far, I think they've done a really nice job of it.
Yeah. I haven't used it extensively yet, but my overall impression has been without using it as a critic, even just, I was kind of a critic about the setup process, but using it just like almost just kind of like subconsciously, just letting it soak in. I'm like, why am I just like enjoying using this? Like, I just kind of like it. And I think it's because they've done a good job. I posted a tweet about this. It was something like that. They've kind of they've managed a sort of Wikipedia like stickiness to the browsing, where you're like looking at an artist and they're like they link to other artists that you might like, and sort of like it does feel a little bit curated in that sense, in a way that actually draws me into it. And I, for whatever reason, I never had that browsing experience, even on Beats, work as well for me. Mm-hmm. So I'm happy with it. And there's something about it, like it has that designed by Apple feel now, which is not to say that iTunes has the designed by Apple feel too, which is not great, but there's something about it. Like, I think the custom UI of Beats was nice, but I think there's something almost like, I think there's something subtle about the Apple Music experience that mm-hmm. feels to me, maybe it's like I feel more at home there.
Yeah, I think that's definitely true. Beats was well designed, I guess, but it was also, it leaned a little more toward Android type design or just kind of
like web design, right?
Or yeah, just, more yeah. like web or Android, or just kind of different for being different and noticeable. Whereas Apple Music, I definitely think it's Beats Music 2.0. It feels a lot like that, but it also feels much more at home on the platform.
Yeah,
they've done a good job with it. I like it. And they talked in the keynote. Everyone at that point in the keynote a few weeks ago was like, oh my gosh, end this thing already. I thought it was fine, but a lot of people were like, this is going on way too long.
Yeah.
But one of the points that they did try to make was this thing about this is not just an algorithm, right? It's people picking music. And it's that's kind of a lie, but it's kind of true. And the lie part is that it's actually the best of both, I think. I'm not exactly sure how they do this stuff, but I think the way they do it is they have just a huge depth to hand-curated playlists and whatnot. But, and because they have that, then they can have algorithms that give you better results, right? So if you like some bands that are in a hand-curated playlist from a real person that came up with it, you're also probably going to like other bands in that playlist. Like, so they can do a lot of interesting things programmatically because they have the good data that it's not just
right.
a list of, tracks and they have all this curated stuff. So then they can build better stuff on top of that.
Right. Like, I like how you go into it now and it's not saying like if the For You section, first of all, I think is perfectly named. It's like some people might just find it kind of I don't know, saccharin or something, but it's like, that's what people want to see. It's for mm-hmm. you. And when I go into For You, it doesn't have any bogus recommendations, you know, like all the automated stuff out there is like, well, because you like Elliot Smith, you might like, I don't know, Beyonce. Like, and like, yeah, I might, but that's kind of like they're taking a leap. And what has happened for me, at least on Apple Music, is, and maybe this is because, you know, I sort of have some predictable likes in my library, but they're able to say like, oh, like these have you seen these, Manton, the like deep cuts?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm looking at my homepage right now, and they've got like this whole section about Beck. They have this Vampire Weekend deep cuts, and then they got a bunch of indie bands that I like below that. And it's like the deep cuts stuff is clearly curated by somebody who knows the subgenre, right?
Yes.
And so I found cool stuff in there too, where I was like, oh, I was looking at one and it was like Belle and Sebastian, and then it came up with something like a BBC, you know, studio recordings from them. I was like, oh, I didn't know about that. And it's like that kind of discovery where you're like, okay, somebody else is being paid by Apple to be on top of the music that I like. And that's obviously not going to work for like less popular, you know, if there's some like local Austin band that you like that happens to be in your library, Apple doesn't have a deep cut for you. But, you know, a lot of us, at least I think, have bands that we like that are big enough that Apple has gone to the trouble to say, okay, let's see what else we can find for this person.
Right. And that's why it works so well too, is because they do have this for not just the bands you and I like, but thousands of other bands probably.
Right.
So they actually have something for almost everybody, I think, in that page. Have you listened to Beats One?
I tried it very briefly. I want to give it another chance. But I tried it when I first turned it on. It was like, I don't usually have this reaction to music, surprisingly, maybe because I do like music and I have specific tastes, but I don't usually have the reaction of like literally wanting to flee.
Right. Well, it's definitely like, if you don't like pop music, if you hate hip hop at all, or, you know, like there's certain genres of music that if you're not into it all, it's not your thing. But I do love the idea behind it. Mm-hmm. And I love, like, it's actually been a long time. So we have XM radio in the car and I love it. I love hearing sports commentating and live, live games. I love that I have four or five stations that are commercial free that I can just listen to music. But even as great as that is, it's still missing a little bit of what used to be great about radio, where you had a DJ that actually talked to you and said some things in between tracks. So I love that part about Beats. I feel like it'll be kind of hit or miss. Like, I'll turn it on and maybe something will be great and I'll listen to it for a few minutes in the car.
Yeah.
And if it's not, it's okay. I'll listen to something else. But the couple times I have listened to it, that I've gotten into it, it has captured that, you know, whoever's on, I don't even know who they've got on there, but whoever's on is like, I love this album. Like, I'm going to show you this and I'm going to listen, show you, right. play this for you. And it's, and you know, if they're on a roll and it's, it fits with what you want to listen to, I think it's neat.
Well, here's what so when I turned it on, I was still trying to wrap my head around what Beats One Music was. And I think I just sort of thought it was going to be this like 24-hour like circuit of songs. I knew it was live DJ'd, but I didn't kind of appreciate what that was going to be.
Mm-hmm.
And so I turned it on and it had this song that made me want to flee. And I was just like, I never want to turn that on again. but then I went, I complained about it on Twitter and people were like, oh yeah, it just got really bad. Like, some people were agreeing with me that like, that whatever, that for our tastes, at least the music had just gone into a bad place. So then I went to the site, you know, they have their own Tumblr page, applemusic.tumblr.com/beats1. I think you get there by going to beats1music.com as well. But you can kind of wrap your head around it if you look at it and you go, okay, there's these three main anchors. But they only do like, you know, one show a day, each of them. And then I guess it's repeated 12 hours later. And then But so even just looking at that alone, like some people are going to be like, okay, I really like Zane Lowe's DJing and I want to listen to his show. Right. And my kind of like initial reaction was like, ah, this song sucks and I can't skip it. This is like going back to the Stone Age. But think about what we're doing here, Manton. We're on a podcast where if people don't like the topic I'm on right now, they can't skip it easily. I mean, they could go 30 seconds forward. But the point is like people tune into our show not to like hear their favorite points discussed, but because they like listening to us talk about something. And I think that's the key for Beats One Radio is people are already fans of these DJs that Apple has hired. And they're going to be tuning in and they're going to gain new fans. And it's like, in that sense, it's kind of like there's a daily music podcast from each of these DJs. And so it's like you don't tune in because you're expecting to hear your favorite songs. You tune in because you have a kind of like fan relationship with them as a broadcaster. And then, so I like that idea. Like I can see some people are going to be like, you know, I like Beats One Radio. That doesn't mean I like to listen to it all day long. And it doesn't, you know, a breakthrough for me was like Beats One is not a specific genre. It's a time scheduled selection of different personalities, different genres. And then I like this approach they're doing where if you go to that page, to beats1radio.com, and you scroll down, it says July lineup. And they have like these specific attractions, you know, like Dr. Dre is going to have on July 4th at 6 p.m. He's going to have a show. And Elton John is going to be on at 10 p.m. the same day. Mm-hmm. And I can see this being like, oh, okay, I get it. Like these are specific reasons to tune in.
Yeah.
And it's not because you think it's not, you know, somebody who tunes in to listen to Elton John on Apple Radio isn't going to be like pissed that, I mean, they might be, but they're not going to be like, well, he played a song I didn't like. Skip.
Right. No, that's the whole thing, right? You don't have to like all of it because guess what? You also have tens of thousands of songs you can stream from, yeah, you know, Apple Music as a whole or your own library or there's others. I mean, yeah, it's like you maybe like one of the DJs or maybe you just jump in, which is what I've been doing, jump in for a little bit. If you like the tracks of playing, you stick with it. If not, you listen to something else. You listen to a podcast. We have so much we can listen to. It's pretty great. It's hard to complain about it too much. But I like what they're doing so far.
And I think it's a great start. We'll see where it goes.
I didn't even really look at it. So, by the way, it's beats1radio.com, not beats1music.com if anyone typed the wrong thing
in. Oh, okay. Yeah.
And it redirects to a Tumblr site, which is also just in itself fascinating to me, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Apple hosts it's like worldwide radio station launch on Yahoo. It's essentially what that means.
Yeah, I didn't even think about it in that way, but that's yeah, that's also
a true Yahoo page.
I was thinking about just like the blogging aspect of that, but also it doesn't look like a Tumblr site, or maybe Tumblr's added a lot of features since I last looked at it, but there's some interesting stuff going on there. And
yeah,
I don't know what this actually means, but I mean, on one hand it means nothing, it's just, hey, it's a Tumblr site, what big deal? But Apple never does this kind of thing. They never put a huge page that is super important to their company on something that's not Apple.com. And I think part of it is just they're letting the artists and the DJs and the musicians run with this thing, right? Mm-hmm. And Tumblr is something that they're into, and so they go for it.
Yeah, I think maybe the key is that they recognize Tumblr as a social network that has more sort of like, it's not as, I don't think, it, I don't even know. Maybe it's as big as Twitter. It's definitely not as big as Facebook, but it has this cachet in like the like hipster youth world still.
Yep.
And I think probably what they're recognizing is, you know, they can't post something on Apple.com that can be easily liked and shared and reposted on Tumblr.
Right.
But all their stuff being hosted on Tumblr, obviously it can. So maybe that's something to do with it.
Yeah, that's interesting. I like what they've done. It seems like so far all the new stuff this week has been pretty good. I know they had some little hiccups with Beats One where that first night, like people were getting errors. And in fact, I tried to tune in later in the day and I was also getting an error. So I don't know. That's your classic scaling problem, I guess. But so far I really like what they're doing. It'll be cool to tune in and see how this kind of, you know, just kind of evolves over the next year.
Yeah.
Okay, this week we're happy to have Smile Software sponsoring the show again. This week they want us to talk about Text Expander 5, brand new version of Text Expander. Text Expander 5 helps you type faster by making suggestions for frequently typed phrases to abbreviate and save time. Text Expander reminds you of missed opportunities to use your abbreviations while you're typing. Sync your snippets among multiple devices, storing them anywhere on iCloud Drive or Dropbox. Set a hotkey for inline search so that all you need is a fragment of your snippet to find and expand it quickly. Create fill-in snippets to personalize and standardize repetitive replies. And Text Expander 5 also adds support for JavaScript, which works in Text Expander Touch for iPad and iPhone too. Save time and effort with Text Expander from Smile. You can learn more at smilesoftware.com/coreint.
Yeah, this is another great update from the folks at Smile. And I love how they take this product idea, Text Expander, which sounds like such an easy, or not easy, it sounds like such a simple idea. And it's, you know, gone back years now, this idea that you type a specific string of characters on your Mac and it expands those characters, replacing them with something longer and more, you know, would be more difficult to type, especially frequently. So I've been using this Manton for years and years and years, and it saves me so much time, especially as an indie developer who does his own customer support. And what I find so impressive is that every time they come out with a new update, I'm thinking like, okay, well, they've finally done it. They've finally added the last feature that they, anybody could possibly add to a utility like this. And it's like, okay, well, now you can, you know, at one point they're like, okay, now you can do all this fancy stuff. Now we have like little macros where you can like fill in the contents of other snippets into your snippets. You know, there's this whole like nesting thing. So it's like I have a snippet for my name. And so then I include in snippets for customer support. Like at the end, I just put the snippet expansion for my name. So if I ever want to change my name, I can just go in and change the text expander snippet. But then no, they, you know, years ago they add like scripting support and I'm like, what? Like now you can run a script instead of just populating that with some other snippet. And then the big one, one of the big ones this time around with Text Expander 5, of course, is that suggestions of frequently typed phrases. So, you know, you're going about your daily life, you're using Text Expander, you're feeling good about yourself, you're not typing Daniel Jalkett, you're just like typing slash DJ, you're not typing, you know, a big laborious explanation about the, you know, a workaround for a bug in your software, you're just typing, you know, slash Mars fix or something like that. It's great. And then Smile comes out with Text Expander 5 and you start running it and it starts saying, hey, you should really stop typing that really long like URL that you've been typing in half of your emails, you mm-hmm. know, and it says this would be a good candidate for a snippet. It puts up a little notification. So you click it and you go, oh, okay, well, I'll give it a try. And then next thing you know, you're no longer typing that thing anymore. It's like, it's a great idea, I think, to go above and beyond. Like the description of the product is, hey, user, you configure things that you know you type all the time, and so you won't have to type them as much. And then the next step with this is, let us pay attention for you, and we'll tell you what you type all the time, which is just a brilliant, brilliant idea, and it's obvious in retrospect, but I'm really glad they finally have that in Text Expander 5. So Text Expander 5, in summary, it's a great utility for your Mac. Of course, there is an iOS version as well, Text Expander 3. It also includes a custom keyboard on iOS. One cool thing that they've added in Text Expander 5 is JavaScript. You mentioned that, Manton. But what's cool about that, too, is you can run now these scripted expansions with JavaScript that will work the same then on iOS and on the Mac. You know, for years they've had AppleScript support on the Mac. Of course, there's no AppleScript on iOS. This seems like another big move forward. I haven't gotten into the JavaScript scripting stuff myself yet, but this is going to be something I think I get into as I try to make my sort of repository of snippets for the Mac and iOS all be able to do the same thing. So anyway, in a nutshell, folks, you really, if you're out there and you haven't given Text Expander a try, you've really got to try it out. It's really cool on the Mac too. When you use it, of course, it's free to begin with. If you download their trial from their site, and then it reminds you how much time you've saved. It says, like, by the way, you've saved like an hour over the past week or whatever by not typing those long things that you usually used to type. So again, you can learn more at smilesoftware.com/coreint. Text Expander 5 is $44.95, but if you already happen to own an older version, you can upgrade for only $19.95. Or if you purchased it after January 1st of this year, the previous version, then it's a free upgrade for you. So go to smilesoftware.com/coreint. Also drop them a line on Twitter at smilesoftware. Let them know you appreciate their sponsorship of Core Intuition. We sure appreciate it. And we hope you'll give Text Expander a try. Thanks, Smile, for your ongoing support of the show. All right, Manton, you know me. I am kind of like the weird guy who reports bugs to Apple and doesn't complain too much about it too frequently. You still report bugs to Apple? Are you on the – what side of the camp are you on? Are you somewhere in the middle? Are you in the never report? There's some people who never report, and it's like they'll be damned if anybody's going to make them report a bug because they've been burned too badly by Apple.
I am sadly – I don't fit that description exactly, but it has been a very long time since I filed a bug. As a general rule, I just don't file bugs anymore. It's not because I've been burned so much, although I have certainly filed a bug or two that have just kind of gone into the void and seemed like a waste of time. But I have just have a lot to do.
And yeah, yep, that's
just,
true.
Filing a bug well takes time that it does. Do not have. And so, like I said, I'm on 10.11 full-time. On my iPad, I'm on iOS 9 full-time. I've hit some minor things that I should file. I've had some confusion about APIs that maybe I should file or talk to folks at Apple about. But as a general rule, I can't justify the time to do it. And I hate saying that because I love that as a whole, the developer community is very good about filing bugs. And I would hate to discourage that because I think filing bugs is super useful to Apple and to us, but I'm too busy right now. I can't take the time. I can't even take an hour or two to come up with how to reproduce it, example code, write it up, etc. Unfortunately, I love filing bugs for third-party developers. I love sending you real quick things, or someone else whose app I use a lot, a new beta version or something, because I know I can type up something real quick, send it out, takes 5 minutes or less, and I know that a real person who I may have even met before will look at it and either say, yeah, I know about it, or no, thanks. Thanks for filing it. I love doing that. But for Apple, it's a little bit too big of a process right now.
Yeah. So I think I've adopted a sort of middle ground where I do try to write as good of a bug as possible. But if it's going to take me a ton of time and that time is not serving other interests of mine, like sometimes when it comes down to it, I just really feel like I need to figure out what's going on. So I'm going to come up with steps to reproduce. I'm going to come up with sample code because it serves me to have that.
This is a difference, I think, between you and I, but you hit a problem. You like to dig into it. And sometimes it's a rabbit hole, but other times it sparks this great insight into how the operating system works that will serve you later.
It is a very mixed bag, and sometimes I have to say to myself, like, who gives a damn that you now know like extensively how this or that works if it hasn't advanced your software shipping schedule? But I took a quick look, Manton, and just to demonstrate how weirdly over the top sort of I am about filing bugs, since WWDC, I have filed over 20 bugs.
Nice.
And I don't even know how many of those are ignored. Some of them are closed already as duplicates. Some of them are just sitting there. But this came up, this came to mind because I got one example yesterday of a real good, and this shows how low the bar is, but real good, quote unquote, response from Apple. There were no complete sentences or anything, so I wouldn't go so far as to say it was prose. But so they're doing their job quickly as well. But I had this crashing bug where the dock was just crashing all the time. And I had a suspicion that it had to do with something about my dashboard. Because, you know, the dock is like one of these things. It's kind of like iTunes, where it's just like grown to encompass tons of stuff that you wouldn't expect to be in there. Mm-hmm. So like the dashboard is part of dock, application switcher is part of dock. That whole like, what's it called? Mission control. When you swipe up dock, it's all dock. And I'm looking around, I'm thinking, surely this is something to do with my like widgets or something, like apps I've used, my launch pad also dock. And then I just couldn't figure it out. I was trying to fix my problem myself and blow something away. Finally, I said, all right, I'm going to file this bug. And I just said, I wasn't even expecting that great of a response, because I said, hey, by the way, I'm getting this crash all the time. What can I do? Anything? I'm looking at my bug report now. I said, I tried to move my widgets aside and I completely deleted the spaces and dashboard preferences, but still crashes. So I reported this the 29th. That's just a few days ago. And yesterday I got this response from Apple that has these detailed steps for how to navigate to this like weird like folder that I guess is where all the dock preferences are actually stored. It's in like /var/garbage/garbage, et cetera, et cetera. They say, go here, go into this com.apple.doc.launchpad, rename this database directory, kill the dock, and let me know if the crashes still happen. And I tried it, and the crashes stopped.
Nice.
And they said, oh, and if it stops, send me the DB that you renamed. Done. This was like a flashback to like, you know, 1996 Apple.
That's great. Yeah. And it sounds, actually, your problem is fixed and sounds genuinely useful to them as well.
Right. Like they may get some data that reproduces the crash. I fix my crashes here. I also learned this weird new thing now about where Doc stores its preferences, which, by the way, if anybody wants to check it out, type from the terminal getconf space, and then all in uppercase, Darwin_user_dir. And you will see this garbage directory inside of which you will find preferences for things like the doc. So have fun.
Nice. We all learned something today. This is great. Seriously, that's cool. It's nice that the has a happy ending, and those, you know, even if the 19 other bugs you filed don't go anywhere, you'll keep plugging away at it, because every once in a while something good happens from it.
You know what I like too, Manson, about being the weird guy who reports all the bugs is I have the moral high ground.
Yeah.
You know, there's something to that for me. Like it's meaningful to me. Like I did my part, and I'm not saying Apple always does its part. But I did my part, and I agree. If it starts costing me more than I think it's worth, I'll stop. And I definitely don't – I'll be honest. I don't report as many bugs as I would if I got better responses. And there's some teams for which I just won't report bugs anymore because they've burned me too many times.
Interesting, yeah.
You know, give them a chance. And I would encourage our listeners to do so as well. Face it, like you're going to get like – probably 90% returned as duplicates. They're not going to say thank you. They're not even going to say please when they ask you for the data sometimes, if they do ask you. Sometimes it's going to be just like confounding why they closed it, why they marked it as a duplicate. It's a price you pay. You know, you play the game. You just go into it not expecting much. And every once in a while, they might teach you something about where the dock stores its preferences and make you feel like you actually did something useful that day.
Cool. Hey, one quick question before we wrap this up. Do you repost it to OpenRadar as well?
It's funny. I often do, and I have a hack. I have made my own Safari extension that makes it easy to do that. But I didn't in this case, only because it was specifically to do with 10.11, and I still feel this weird allegiance to an NDA. So that's why I'm only talking about it on podcasts, which are
this is the end of the show. No,
yeah, right. Nobody's listened this long, right? Yeah. Huh. Everybody just listened through the complete text expander ad, and then they turned it off, right?
Interesting. Yeah. Well, that's, you know, it's an evolving thing. I expect Radar changes slowly, and the community's response and how people file bugs and stuff, it also changes slowly, but It'll be interesting to see 5 years, 10 years, how things look. What's the state of bug reporting?
Well, you know, as we've said, it's the changing Apple. You don't know how they're going to change next. And I can imagine a world in which they get better, more efficient, more polite. It's funny, mentioning Text Expander, one of the things I've been saying for a while is somebody just needs to teach the people who work at Apple to use Text Expander to say /thanks and have it expand to, we really appreciate you taking the time to report this bug. You know, we're looking into it. And even though we're closing this as a duplicate, you know, the information you provided will no doubt prove helpful to our teams who are working on
this. But if you, they'd have to have like /thanks1, /thanks2, like different variations. If you see the same thing, you'd be like, they're not typing that.
Yeah, maybe I'm being a little bit exaggerating.
When I respond to customers sometimes, I kind of double check, like, am I saying exactly the same thing? Because I tend to close. I usually say thanks somewhere in the email, either at the beginning or at the end. And I usually end with something like, you know, please let me know if you still have a problem, or please let me know if I can help with anything else, et cetera. But I try to mix it up a little bit so it's not always exactly the same thing. I'm not a robot. I'm a real person. I can automate stuff. I can make my typing easier. But it's still me getting a response.
All right. Well, it's a good thing we don't use Text Expander for our whole show. We try to mix it up here a little bit, too. For our closing, though, we do like to remind our listeners that we appreciate reviews, ratings, etc. on the Apple Podcast Directory. We have a job board, which can be very useful to you as a job seeker or a job hirer, at jobs.coreint.org. And we really appreciate you all listening to the show. Please continue to listen. Tell your friends if you think you know somebody who might like the show. And Manton, I will talk to you next week.
Sounds good. Bye.